There has been a request, finally, from someone about more about fear. And keep in mind that these monthly sessions, I am here to be of service to you. I am here to serve you and what your needs are. And so know that you can always send me requests. And I know that the email comes in and it makes a suggestion every month, but maybe you don't read them anymore. So I just want to make sure that you know that you can send in requests. So there has been a request that I talk more about fear and less about kind of just bigger Zen concepts. But of course, when talking about fear, I'm always talking about bigger fear concepts. I am what's known as an industry disruptor, and I challenge existing norms around the subject of fear. And I think that this is very important for us to do, or for me to do, because what we're doing regarding fear and anxiety isn't really working. What I do then is I throw out some big ideas. What I want to do this month is throw out a pretty big idea then. And this is going to be interactive. I just want to give you an outline of these monthly sessions. Like right now they're small. We have more people signed up for than actually attend them live, but I haven't marketed these in probably a year or whenever they first started. And I am just in the middle of a lot of personal stuff, and so I'm just not doing any marketing efforts whatsoever. So I think that now, while they're small, before I make another push to sell them, that this is a great opportunity as I share big ideas for us to be really interactive with each other and have a small group experience. So as I introduce something this month, I would like you to really go inward. I'm going to give you a quote. Really go inward with the quote and see how it resonates with you. And please absolutely interrupt me. Raise your hand, ask questions. If you have something that you want to say, let me know. I want to make these more interactive from now on, and I definitely want to make these more about your questions from now on. So, really listen up so we can make them more interactive. I want to read a quote to you. It's from William Hazlitt. He was in the 1800s as an English essayist, drama and literary critic, painter, social commentator, and philosopher. And I saw this quote and it kind of blew my mind because of how much it relates to my life right now, but also how it relates to what's happening in the world right now. And I know that everybody's going through difficult times. Not everybody. Some people, they're really enjoying their COVID experience, but people are dying. There's a lot of social reconstruction going on. Like a lot of old established systems are just being broken apart, heavily criticized, ripped apart even. And so we are, even if we are living in our homes and having a nice experience at home, just out in the world and with climate change. I mean, I live in Salt Lake City. I can't believe the wildfires the last 2 years and the smoke and the air quality. It's like we are in it with climate change right now. We're all having to endure a lot right now. And so the quote by William is, "The art of life is to know how to enjoy a little and to endure much." I'll read it again. "The art of life is to know how to enjoy a little and to endure much." Taking it back into fear, my fear translation, I wrote this down, is the art of life is to enjoy little moments of freedom in between the fear. Say that again. The art of life is to enjoy little moments of freedom in between the fear. So what we're doing is, I mean, this is not just about, oh, fear. This is about the art of life, like life, the universe, and everything, the meaning of life, all of that. To enjoy the life just a little bit and to endure a whole bunch of fear and all that, like that's it's a little depressing, right? But I really enjoy this quote because I don't know if it resonates with you guys, but it definitely resonated with me, probably because of what I'm going through in my life right now. But here's the question. Because of what I teach, that the art of life is to learn how to do a dance with fear. Like if you can learn how to do a dance with fear, then you've got it made. Like life is going to be so much easier. Things are going to flow a lot more readily. Fear is such a big part of your life. this is what I've been teaching, that the art of life is learning how to do a dance with fear. And what this quote is suggesting is that, well, you also want to work towards having enjoyable moments that are free from fear, which kind of contradicts my message. So I thought that we would try on both. You know, is life about dancing with fear, or is life about enjoying the moments that are free from fear? Try to say that 10 times fast. So let's try on both. Let's first start with the art of life is to learn how to dance with fear. Now, fear is with us all the time. Me, I know that I'm going through probably one of the scariest experiences of my life right now with all that I have going on. My ski career was nothing compared to this. And it's been really, really hard. And I think the reason why I decided to focus on this subject is because of some things that have happened to me in the last 2 days. Noteworthy of most is that I was just so pickled in recirculating fear stuck in my body. Tomorrow I'm going in with 3 lawyers, 2 mediators, and my husband, whom I haven't seen in 8 months or talked to. I'm going to have to see him, and we're going to negotiate our divorce. And we plan on being there from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. to do this, all 7 of us. And it's, you know, and I also have this TED talk to memorize, and I'm memorizing every word of every sentence for a 16-minute talk. So it's, and I have to do it in a week. So this is what I have going on this week. Plus my house is a shit show with the remodel. And many of you guys know that that's what I have going on. So right now for me, it's hard. It's really hard. I have a lot of fear. I feel very, very uncomfortable. And think about the challenges that you have this week or this month or even this year that is hard for you and the amount of fear that you have in your life. And, you know, there's fear that you choose, like me deciding to give the TED Talk. I consciously choose to invite a bunch of fear into my life. But the thing is, I wasn't in the mood for fear, but I still said yes because it's a TED Talk and I've been wanting to do one for a while. And so there's fear that you choose, things that you choose to do that are scary, roller coasters, go skiing, start a new business, versus fear that happens to you, like somebody that does something awful to you, that disrespects you, that abuses you, that all of a sudden there was a wildfire and I was given evacuation notice, like that kind of stuff where I didn't choose this fear, but it's being imposed on me because of life circumstances. And when fear is all the same. There's no difference between these two types of fear. There aren't two types of fear. It's just fear, right? But if you don't choose the fear to be in your life, then you start to feel like a victim to it, which is definitely what I've started to feel. So as for learning how to navigate a flowing state with that fear, which is what I teach, it's hard. It really is hard. I mean, I'm in it. This is what I teach. This is what I live. I'm having a really hard time doing it. You know, I'm suffering a lot. And I reached out to a client who's actually on the call right now. I won't name names, but this person, I said, what is the biggest insight that you've gotten from working with me regarding fear? I'm going to read it to you. It's very beautiful. This person wrote, I realized fear is a real part of me, not the dramatized, intellectualized concept it's reported to be. This explained a lot about the difficulty in my previous 4 decades. It's comforting to know fear is always ready. This is like a poem, a light touch at a fast pace, and fear's work is done. Sometimes the light touch is not so light. Then I forget, and then remember again. Remember to dance, not freeze. It's as necessary and fundamental as breath. So what we have is the dance with fear is both so hard and so poetic and so beautiful. And we forget, we go back to old habits. Many of you have been working with me one-on-one. Maybe you came to my ski camp. Maybe we've never worked together except for in these calls, but we go back to habitual patterns. Maybe you read my book. We go back to habitual social norm patterns of dealing with our fear in a resistant way because that's what we're taught to do. And that's like the predominant message that's out there regarding fear. And all of it, though, it's like there's fear if you do, there's fear if you don't, there's fear that you choose, there's fear that gets imposed on you. It's all so uncomfortable. It makes us feel like crap and just so depressing because it's just relentless. And so what I did last night is I'm like, I've had it. I can't take it anymore. I've got to go find a moment of joy. And so I drove an hour and a half to go to a hot spring that has lithium in the water just naturally. And I practiced my speech there, and I spent 4 hours in the water just practicing my speech. Everybody there thought I was nuts, just talking to the air. And then I laid in the water and I still felt the anxiety, and but I did have a moment of freedom from it. And then I drove home, the hour and a half home, and there was so much traffic and there was so much road construction. There were big lights and it was so stressful. By the time I got home, it was midnight. I was right back in feeling like crap again. It was a good plan, but to drive 3 hours round trip and work hard just to have a moment of relief from my fear. Oh my gosh. So back to the quote, it's a beautiful quote, but it's also kind of depressing, isn't it? So I want everyone to just shift right now into doing your best with fear. I want you, and if you're into voice dialogue, and if I've worked with you regarding voice dialogue, make the shift into the voice of the one who does a dance with fear right now. If you don't know about voice dialogue, just find the part of you that is either trying to do a dance with fear or does do a dance with fear. And let's just sit for one moment dancing with our fear. When you dance, you have to breathe. Notice if it's a salsa dance or a slow dance or an awkward slow dance from like high school. See the fear like a person that lives in your body. Are you fighting with that fear right now, or are you doing a dance with it? Are you trying to do a dance with it? Are you succeeding in doing a dance with it? What does the dance look like? So the art of life is either the dance with fear, or the art of life is finding enjoyable moments of freedom from the fear. They're two totally different things. So looking at the second one, the art of life is to find enjoyable moments of freedom from the fear, like I had last night, very briefly. This is also depressing. It doesn't feel like much of a plan, does it? It's like fear, 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 fear. Okay, I'm in it, I'm in it, I'm in it. Oh, look at the pretty flower. Fear, fear, fear. It doesn't seem like much of a plan to either dance with the awful feeling or try to have just brief, isolated, tiny moments without it. Two not so great choices. Yet why are we acknowledging this as an alternative? Probably because if we decide that the goal in our life or the art of life is to try to create or enjoy moments of freedom from fear, just know that that's going to affect your practice and how you deal with fear, which is what our conversation is about tonight. So why don't we also spend another minute in a different voice? The second voice that we're exploring tonight is the voice of the one who looks for enjoyable moments that are free from fear. And this is where you have your gratitude practice. This is where you find love in your heart, where you try to shift into joy. But look at it for the next minute as just being the one who's looking for these enjoyable moments. Notice where you look. Close your eyes if it helps. Do you look outside of you, maybe for a sport or a person or an activity? Or do you look inside? Maybe the activity gives you that feeling of joy. It's not necessarily then the activity that you seek, but the joy that it brings you inside. Can you find a moment of joy sitting here? Is it just there, or are you having to create it? Maybe even artificially. Steer your mind to something that gives you pleasure. Make the choice that we're all told that we can make, which you can. Certainly if you're in a moment of awareness. Do you have joy from being in this group? We are going to, well, let's see, should we separate into groups of two, or should we? I think that I know that one person, they don't have a microphone, and I know that some people can find this challenging, but why don't we just keep it as an open forum instead of separating into groups of two? But I would like to hear from you guys now about which you prefer. Do you prefer going for dancing with fear, or do you prefer to go for moments of freedom from fear, or do you seek both? So why don't we just open the floor to just having you talk?
Yeah, this is David. I'd say seek both. For me.
Do you have a habitual pattern of doing one over another?
Let me think about that one. I don't think so. I mean, they're both in there. I think this is, you know, a lot of this kind of reflects back to a similar discussion we had last month, I have to say. But anyways, dancing. Yeah, I think both.
You want to know why this is a similar discussion to last month?
Why is that?
Because my training's in Zen.
Yeah.
And the Buddha teaches the middle way.
Ah.
And so I'll always bring it back to the middle way. And sometimes even the radical balance between two opposites, like good and evil, for example. The Buddha says that the only sustainable possibility is the middle way. And of course, he was talking about the balance between opposites, maybe the 10,000 voices. And I've outlined these as voices. And really, we're talking about practices. You know, so if somebody's just trying to seek moments of freedom from fear, that would be a stuck place. If somebody was only looking to have intimacy with fear, I have learned that that's a stuck place too. I mean, I have had so much fear and I've just been feeling it to death, embracing it, loving it, feeling it, embracing it, loving it. And finally, I'm like, Jesus Christ, enough fear already. Like, I gotta have a break at some point. I kind of only just realized this last night, mostly because my life has been reasonably okay, you know, but when you're going through a shitstorm of really strong negative emotions, like I have, like you learn new things. So, if you have something else that you want to say, David, about the middle way for you, or that you do both, and it also, of course, depends, like on your mood, and depends on the day, and depends on how much fear you have in your system, where you may get to the tipping point where you're like, enough already. Anything else you want to say?
Not right at the moment. I'm thinking though.
Well, that's what I'm hoping to inspire. Anybody else have thoughts that they want to share, or questions or comments?
Yes. My first thought about this was the dance is so much better, and actually the reprieve is a part of the dance, but I've just ruminating thought, well, like with every other part of my life, I try to capitalize on what comes my way, and those are my opportunities. So that's sort of more like, trying to avoid it. But I guess I may be a little unresolved about this.
You know, we're not always in the mood for fear, too, are we?
No.
You know, when I was offered this TED talk, I was not in the mood for fear. And when I got the call and they said, oh, we want to give you a TED talk, for me, it wasn't like, oh, TED talk. It was more like, oh, God, like, you know, hey, Kristen, we're going to dump a bunch more fear on you. But there's a possibility that this could really work out for you if you say yes to it. Like that's what the offer was. And I'm like, oh God. And then of course fear is my thing. So I'm habitually patterned to say the yes to anything scary. And I actually thought about not doing it after Simone Biles bailed on the Olympics. I'm like, oh God, if she can do that, I can bail on a TED talk, right? Especially if I'm overwhelmed. You know, I don't know what was going on with her, but I would imagine that if I talked to her, part of the conversation might be that she just was not in the mood for fear, and she couldn't handle it. She had that those issues with her vertigo and all that. So, anybody else want to say anything about these choices, or even something because I've introduced being in the mood for fear or not in the mood for fear?
What happens when fear is you don't have a choice? Like you're walking down the street and someone attacks you and you run away fast. And so it invokes fear and so it keeps you safe. So I always look at fear as being kind of Gemini. So it's like what I think of fear and then fear by itself. Just reacting naturally. So, how do you?
Well, going back to the quote, the art of life is to know how to enjoy a little and to endure much. You know, in that moment, obviously, there's no enjoyment in that. I mean, some sick BDSM person might like, I don't know. Everybody's different, but I don't want to say everybody. I mean, that's something that you wind up enduring. And then the fear, there's the person that's assaulting you, and then there's the mind mess up that where you're like, oh my gosh, that was me trying to say not say mind fuck. The mind fuck, I'm just going to say it, of like realizing that there are people out there that this is how they make their living, you know, hurting people and terrorizing people. And, you know, this is more about the endurance or enduring something that is really awful. And I don't think that we're in a place while it's happening, of course, to make a conscious decision of, you know, deciding whether you're going to be in flow with your fear or not. This is when you find out whether your fear practice has actually worked. You know, do you have PTSD afterwards? Are you making on point physical reaction in the form of freeze, fight or flee based on some unconscious thought free intuitive reaction that fear is there to provide for you? And then after the thief is gone, are you in flow with your anger? Do you file a police report? Do you go numb? Like, you know, this is where you're really put in a place, a position to really see what your relationship is with fear and whether this work that you've been doing on being in flow with it is going to pay off or not. And then, of course, with a rude awakening, there's the rude part, then there's the awakening afterwards that can come from having had this horrible thing happen to you and getting to have fear in your life. And I mean, then talking about it at a dinner party, oh my gosh, I got assaulted. And it brings up all these existential questions and all these people are talking about it, and just being around somebody else's fear is exciting and it turns into excitement. And, you know, there's just so much that goes on in a situation like that. And so I'm not sure if there was a question in there. I think there was. What was the question?
Well, it was kind of, the question was your relationship with fear in a situation where, like, you have a relationship with fear and then you have a relationship where it just happens. It shows up for you in a positive way without no matter what your relationship with it is. So if you have like if you're becoming more intimate with fear and you're not fully there, but then you have an incident where fear just comes in automatically to save you in a situation where it's in nature, let's say, you know, it seems like the relationship is more intense when it's saving your life. Like fear, even though you're not in the relationship very long, let's say you're in it for a couple of weeks or whatever, let's say, but then fear takes over as being with you for a long period, you know, as a natural instinct. And that was kind of, it was kind of the relationship between the two, you know, yours beginning in to be forming a relationship with fear on a conscious level, and then one on the unconscious level. And how that plays in your role of developing your relationship with fear.
Right. Well, this could be a really heady question. And sometimes the answer to any question is always going to be depends. And, you know, I can think of a million different scenarios that we could communicate about, but here's all that you really need to know and that can make it as simple as possible. Is I've long wondered whether there's a difference between fear that happens to you, like if you're attacked, versus right. fear that you choose, like mm-hmm. to go ski something challenging or get on a roller coaster or give a speech. And you know, I've had an incredible experience dealing with fear that I have personally chosen, you know, 15 years of that as an athlete. And now I've had a year and a half of fear that has been just really imposed on me. And I can finally say with certainty that there is no difference between these two types of fear. Fear is just fear. There is no good or bad fear. It's just energy. And a lot of people have an unconscious reaction to it where they're habitually patterned, where fear that they chose, they consciously or unconsciously or both are in flow with it on a roller coaster. But if they're mugged, then they're not. And so we, you know, there's definitely a stigma around fear that gets imposed on upon you, especially if you have a habitual pattern of turning into a victim, or you feel like a victim when you're, when it's been imposed on you. And, but the way to deal with fear when you get on a roller coaster, or when you decide to ski something, or when you decide to give a TED talk, it really should mirror the way that, or it should be mirrored in the way that you deal with fear when something happens to you. And I think that we're all right here on these calls in order to be more conscious of our relationship with fear. And so now, I mean, I'm so conscious of my fear, you know, oh, there it is. Oh, there it is. Oh, there, it's there all the time. And, but I still forget, like that client wrote, you know, it's there, but I forget to.
Right. That's what, I agree.
Yeah.
That's, I guess that's what my, I guess that's kind of my point being that your relationship with fear is deeper than you realize it is.
Right. And if we really try to understand or break it down, you know, those of you that have been in a relationship or married or even with kids or, you know, been around people in general, if you try to understand a person, especially one as old and complicated and tapped into something cosmic that we don't even, can't even begin to grasp, you're going to drive yourself nuts. And so when I introduce like big concepts, like I hope you see this one as being, I want to keep it as simple as possible. And it really just comes down to, is your practice going to be about doing a dance with fear, or is your practice going to be about finding moments of freedom from fear, or is it going to be both? And prior to this moment and last night and this webinar right now, I didn't even know that this other one was something that we should, I mean, I know that it was something that we should consider, but I didn't know that we should consider it in this way. But I feel like it really should be both. And back to what Liz was saying, it's like, you can't dance and dance and dance and dance and dance your whole life. I mean, and then sleep and then dance and dance. Like at some point you got to sit down. It's like, hey, Gloria, I really need to just, you know, drink a glass of milk here before we get started again. Right? Like, you got to take a break from the dance. And for some of you, this is my step B. For others of you, this is the second half of my SHIFT acronym. Identify if there's a big enough problem that you want to do something else. You know, figure out is the F what you want to replace it with, and T is take action. Like, okay, I want to be in flow with my fear. I want to do the dance with fear, but you know what? I really need a break. So I want to take a break right now, and I want to smell this rose, and I want to go to the hot spring with the lithium in it, and I just want to lay in the water, and I just want to have a moment of freedom from my fear. So before we move on, is there somebody else that wants to speak? And I'll give you another chance to talk, but this is also another good time to chime in if there's something that is that you want to share or ask.
I had a couple of thoughts. This is Jeff. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We were talking last time about Freud, and I always think Darwin. What if joy and fear were both for the same thing? What if they were both for the same purpose, which was survival, which is true? Fear helps us move away from things that will prevent survival, and joy helps us move toward things which are for survival. And everything else is our cortex, our intellect, trying to figure that out. And what if you weren't just dancing with fear? You were dancing with fear and joy at the same time, all the time. And that the absence of joy might be fear, or might just be normal life. And the absence of fear might be joy. You know, as thinking mammals, we do all this intellectualization. But when it all comes down to it, we're kind of spoiled in the sense that we demand of ourselves not to be in pain. And
which is insane.
And if I were to say Darwin says, Darwin would have not said that life is supposed to be self-actualized. Darwin would have said, well, there's no such thing as a TED talk or money or marriage or divorce. Darwin would just say, we survive. And we've invented all those other things. So I kind of visualize it as we're always dancing with fear and joy. We like joy better, obviously. We don't like fear as much. But I've come to the conclusion that both joy and fear are for the same thing, which is survival. Different parts of it, though. Anyway, that's my counterintuitive contribution.
That's interesting. The emotional study, like the Goldcalm scientists, just the people that are emotional specialists, you know, I talk about in my book as there being five primary emotions, and one of them is fear, one of them is joy. And some studies are just, there are only three primary emotions, fear, joy, and sadness. And that anger, which is the fourth one that is on other lists, is really nothing more than redirected fear. And then I add there's sexuality too. So there's two lists where there's three primary emotions and there's five primary emotions. So on that list of three, there's fear, sadness, and joy. The other has fear, sadness, joy, but also anger and sexuality. But I actually replace the word sexuality with eroticism, which includes the sexual. And so these are the, let's call them primary emotions, kind of like there are primary colors. And you know, there's the three primary colors, and you combine those three primary colors in different ways, and you come up with a billion different types of other colors. And so the primary emotions are basically the basis behind our entire human experience in terms of our ability to feel. And so this is a long way of saying that what you're saying is very interesting to me, because the emotions are so tied together, and they're just, it's like if you have fear and joy together, which is definitely what I had in my ski career, what people have on roller coasters. I, back in the day when I was addicted to fear, if somebody had mugged me, I would have felt joy in that moment. How do I know this? Because I was assaulted. I was picked up hitchhiking by somebody that threatened to rape, sodomize, and murder me. And there was a part of me that enjoyed it. I mean, I didn't get raped, sodomized, or murdered. It was, that's not what I enjoyed. What I enjoyed was the fear that I felt while I was in the van. Yes, it was a van. With that person. And so it's like funny how everybody's so different. And then you think of tears of joy. What is that? I had such a realization once about tears of joy when I was watching The Voice and somebody had just won and they're crying and the announcer is saying, oh my God, tears of joy, tears of joy. I'm like, no, that's sadness. That's sadness that we're looking at, plus joy. And like sadness over all the rejection notices that person, that winner of The Voice, had ever received, you know, the sadness over the fact that his father wasn't there to see him win it or something like that. Like, you know, tears of joy are joy plus sadness. So all the emotions can be really tied together. As for it to do with survival, I haven't given that a thought. That's very interesting. So anybody else?
If anyone else wants to go, please go ahead. This is Jeff Rye. But if no one else has anything to say, I'd like to say a few words.
Go ahead.
So, by the way, Kristen, very nice seeing you again. I I really have strengthened my, it's not a belief that I created on my own. It's just a belief. One of my beliefs that I don't think I could ever shake for the rest of my life is things happen. You hear the cliche, things happen for a reason. And I've heard a lot of, you know, wise folks like you say that, well, it happened for a reason, good or bad, it happened for a reason. And when my wife got breast cancer a couple of years ago, we stumbled onto a series of books and podcasts called Radical Remission, where, yes, there's Western medicine, where radiation, chemotherapy, surgery, you know, doctors, they give you Western medicine that helps you battle cancer or cure yourself of cancer. And we certainly followed that. But Radical Remission, I had known of lots of people who have near-death experience who actually came back on their own. Anita Borjani is the one example that I stumbled across. She was at stage 4 cancer. Her family was called to the hospital. She was going to die that night. She didn't. She came back. The doctors were startled that she was still alive. And not only was she alive, she got stronger and made a full recovery. And that really caught my attention. And I'm sharing all this because I when I look at my life, I see there's so many times where something happened and I didn't want it or I didn't like it. We can call it fear. I am an open-minded person and I often allow it to say, like, okay, well, let's see what happens. But if it's something I really didn't like and something that really hurt my spirit or something that really hurt my body, no, I stopped it. I've learned to do that. Thank God. The easy example I'll give is how I met Kristen. And Kristen, you don't know this, but when I was flying to Alaska, I bought the premium economy seats. I was going to fly in not first class, but I was going to, you know, fly in the nicer seats. When they changed the flight on me, you know, I could have stayed at the seats, but it was a different time, different schedule, and I had to pay a few extra $100. I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. And I was just jokingly saying, they're saying like, well, we can put you in coach, I've flown coach. I'm an engineer. I'm not Bill Gates. I'm not a billionaire. I wish I was, but I'm not. So I just made a joke in my head that like, oh, okay, you're gonna put me back with commoners and coach. But you know, my first reaction was I was upset. I was upset. I was really irritated and upset that I can't believe I was gonna fly premium seats, and now because of scheduled flights and cancellation, blah blah blah, I'm going to sit and coach. And I was kind of upset about that, but I'm like, no, it's okay. I'll go with it. And so I went with it. Well, that's how I met you. If I wouldn't have gone to fly and coach, I never would have met you. And I can't tell you how much I am so glad I met you. That's the easy example. Here's the harder example I'm going to share with the group. So I just turned 50 recently. And, you know, 50-year-olds, there's a variety of screenings you could take just to have, you know, what I thought was a baseline to compare for, you know, future screenings, you know, for health reasons, cancer or whatever. And I had my first screening thinking, okay, yeah, this is just, you know, I'm 50 years old. The doctors recommend to take this screening and it'll be my baseline to compare to for future screening. So if something changes in my body, we can see that something changed. And, you know, well, it was my first screening. And guess what? I have a tumor in my colon. I found that out on Thursday. Of course, I didn't like hearing that news. I wasn't very happy with that. And what I discovered was, yeah, I mean, you know, fear, negative energies, whatever. One of the hardest part for anyone to deal with is like Thursday night and Friday, you know, I was, you know, really upset. And it's like, you know, what do I do? What am I supposed to do? I have no idea what to do. I'm a smart guy. I've got means and resources. What am I supposed to do? And I was pretty upset. Thank God. And Kristen, you know, thank God I had already planned on Friday to do my third kiteboarding lesson on water. And I had a great time doing that. It allowed me to get a little bit of distraction from stressing out about what the heck do I do. So that was Friday. Saturday morning was September 11th. We all have our own stories as to what happened and where we were when that terrible day happened on September 11, 2001. And I, of course, did not want to get on Facebook because I didn't want to. Yes, we should remember that terrible day and all the people who lost their lives. Yes, we should remember that that evil happened, but we somehow came together as a society and overcame that evil. And you turn on the TV and, you know, there's all these remembrances and stories on September 11. I just was not in the mood to, I did not want to hear that. For me, I'm still scared and anxious and scared and upset, sad and angry, because I'm still screaming in my head, what the heck am I supposed to do? So I went for a walk. I was really upset Saturday morning because I didn't want to see any memorials on September 11th. I just was not in the mood. So I went for a walk and I was, you know, pretty upset. I'm going for a morning walk. Went a couple miles, turned around, started walking back. And as I came back, you know, I keep hearing myself say, okay, this is happening for a reason. I may not like the reason, but it's happening. And I learned from radical remission, you know, a lot of people were saying cancer shows up in your life not to be defeated. You're not supposed to beat cancer and conquer it. Cancer showed up in your life. Cancer didn't show up in your life for you to cure. Cancer showed up in your life to cure you of something. And basically it's like what I got from that is like, I'm supposed to get something out of this. I don't know what I'm supposed to get out of this, but I'm supposed to get something out of this. Cancer showed up in my life to teach me something. So when I turned around, I came back from my walk on Saturday. I was still pretty upset and it was a nice sun. I felt the warmth of the sun on me. And a thought of clarity started forming in my mind and in my spirit. And basically I started realizing I want to stay alive in this physical world. I want to watch my two boys grow up, go to school, go to college, get their jobs, get married, start their families, and be what they want to be. I want to spend time with people who love and support me. I want to be able to spend time to love and support others. And this feeling, the spirit, this thought, whatever it was, it just kept growing inside me. And I just thought, I want to live in the physical world. I want to keep doing this. I know life is hard and we run through a lot of suffering, but I want to stay alive and I want to see this happen for many years longer. And then as I rounded the corner again, I had about a mile left to get to my house. I realized two more things. The first one was, I know that there's healing energy all around us. And I know that when people say, you know, gosh, you know, something bad happened, it's like, oh, I wish you well, you know, good luck with that, or, you know, whatever. And when someone says, yeah, I got cancer, you're like, you know, oh, you poor thing, you know, my sentiments, yeah, I wish you all the best. So I know that people are actively wishing for my well-being. So the first thing I'm saying is the first realization is I accept, embrace, and welcome all the healing energies out there and all the healing energies that are being directed towards me, because I've shared this with a handful of friends and they wish me well and they want to see me make a full recovery. And the second thing I realized to this was, I think that's what I needed to get out of this. I think that's why I got cancer, because up until that moment on Saturday morning, I was still kind of like, okay, well, I want to do something adventurous. Okay, I want to go do, okay, I want to feel alive, you know, and that's where I met you. I went heli skiing and I very much enjoyed that. And I certainly want to go back heli skiing again. But I never was satisfied. I wanted to be satisfied, but it's in my mind, it's like, okay, what do I need to do to be, you know, to feel satisfied that I'm living? You know, do I need to make enough money? Do I need to come design the world's longest bridge? Do I need to?
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah.
Let me stop you for 1 second.
Yeah.
Because I think that how I'm going to finish this.
Yep.
for us all is going to help.
Okay.
And then what we can do is have you stick around after the call is over and you can finish talking to me.
Okay. Well, okay. Sure.
And because I'm really glad that you told us about what's going on in your life. And the fact that it's so fresh and so new is really interesting. And I want to, and the fact that you're already going to, you know, there's meaning found to be found in this and lessons to be learned and all of that is really relevant to what we're talking about. And yes, we can call it fear. I mean, it's scary what you're going through. Like, and at this point, you probably don't even know what you're going through yet because you don't have all the answers. And so I'm going to, do you mind if I just continue?
Yep.
And then we'll come back to you if, and anybody's welcome to stick around afterwards. And, but I know some of you will have to go and I want to be sensitive to that. You know, where I was going to take us was I was going to give you an example of a friend of mine, Michael Zimmerman, whose wife died of cancer. Some of you have heard me talk about him before. He's a Zen master now, a Roshi, and he was Chief Justice of Utah and, you know, thought he had the world at his fingertips, married with 4 children under the age of 7, and his wife died of cancer. And he wound up studying Zen, and which is what we're doing here. And the first words of Zen that he heard that gave him a moment of just relief was a very unexpected. It was this woman, she was a Roshi, who was from the Ukraine. She said in a very, very strong Ukrainian accent, "In Zen, there is no hope," she said. And it blew his mind, you know, because he was just looking for a moment of reprieve from his fear and his pain and his suffering and his confusion and his broken heart from losing his wife and his overwhelm and all of that. And to hear that there is no hope. And, you know, you might even have a Zen master say, "There's no lessons, there is no meaning to any of it." But the next day they may say the opposite. You know, Zen is really weird like that. But why this was so, so what I'm trying to get at, Jeff, is that it's really important that instead of rushing to, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to learn something from this. Oh my gosh, you know, there's going to be a silver lining here. I would say that I used to actually run ski camps just for cancer survivors. I won an award for my work with cancer survivors. Probably nobody on the call knows about this because this is before I met any of you. I would say that cancer survivors, 2 years after their diagnosis, after they'd gone through the battle, after whether they, of course, this is dependent on their survival, 100% of them said that cancer is one of the best things that ever happened to me. But in the first week that you're dealing with this, you know, it's important to do the dance with your fear and to feel all your emotions and not try to rush to some sort of lesson that may not have even been formed yet by the universe. So go ahead.
Well, I agree. And I wasn't trying to, and that's the thing. I know it's going to sound like, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm done. Okay. I learned my, no, that's not my, what I was getting at was, the second part was, you know, if this is what I'm supposed to get out of this, you know, then I release this cancer. I have no use for this anymore. You know, the cancer, you know, may go away. No, I don't think I've learned, you know, all I needed to do. And I'm sure I've got plenty to learn. If I've got another 50 years to live in the physical world, I've got plenty to learn to live about life. So I know I'm not the end all be all from that one epiphany moment on Saturday morning. But what I'm saying is, it just felt clear. It felt right. It gave me focus. And because, don't get me wrong, I meet with my doctor tomorrow, and everything, at least right now, I feel like there's a lot of things, winds blowing in my favor.
Well, let me just stop you, because I think by the time we're done, you're going to feel like what you're about to say has already been addressed.
Gotcha.
And out of respect for people's time, because we only have 4 minutes left, I want to just finish up, and I hope everybody's okay with staying over. But if by the end of what I'm going to say next, you still, because I don't want to also suggest in any way that what you experienced is not anything, but it's so gorgeous. It really is, Jeff. And I mean, you are setting yourself up to having a really amazing experience with this dance with, at this point, we'll call it your cancer, or it might not even be cancers from what I understand. So, but just bear with me until we're done. All right.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. And the other thing is that you don't have the benefit of knowing what I teach. And what I teach is about being in the river of suck when your life is sucking. And so what it means to have a dance with fear is we're talking about doing both, like looking for the, you know, and I'm calling it the enjoyable moments in between the fear, but you're also bringing in the element of like the learning experiences in between the fear and the ahas and the, you know, everything happens for a reason in between the fear, like the fear even happens for a reason, which is kind of a next level, if you know what I mean. And so let's just put that lumped under the term that I'm using, which is joy or enjoyment. Lessons necessarily are not joyful, but we'll just put it in there as just so that we can keep things clear and easy to follow. So Michael, there is no hope. What he felt in that moment was just full freedom to just be where he was. Hope is about the future. He wasn't trying to get to anything. He wasn't trying to get to realizations or joy again, or if he wasn't even thinking in terms of falling in love with another woman again. There was none of that. He was just finally given the possibility and the encouragement to just sit in the crap storm that was his life and be in the river of suck that he was going through. And that's what I've been doing a lot in the last year and a half, is that I'm just in the class 5 rapids of my sadness and hurt and rejection and loss and all that I've endured. And, you know, back to the quote, you know, it's about enduring life. You know, I can see that I've been definitely doing that. And we've all been doing that. And there will be moments for you, Jeff, where it'll just feel like, oh, you're not going to be as excited about these possibilities. You know, you're actually going to be in the endurance. If you have cancer and if you get chemo, like that's going to be something to endure. All right. We know that. So I feel like there are 3 things that really it's like that the endurance or the suffering or the pain or the fear offers us. And the first one comes from, and I've referred to this in the past, the book Man's Search for Meaning, that Viktor Frankl talked about, that meaning can be found in 3 ways: in work, in love, and meaning can be found in suffering, which is of course what Jeff is already finding. You know, suffering of course is fundamental to the human experience. And in many ways, it can be like we always say about people that have gone through incredible pain. Oh my gosh, they're so strong. They're the strongest people I've ever met. Well, I mean, in many ways, they've had to be strong. I mean, what else are they going to do? But we're so impressed by this because look at what they can endure. Look at what they can survive. Look at what I can endure and look what I can survive. You know, for me in the last year and a half, my gosh, look at what you're probably going to endure and survive. And your wife has endured and survived from Jeff. So, and this is so important actually to our thriving and finding meaning, that if there's not enough to endure going on in your life, we make shit up, right? We sign up for Spartan races or Tough Mudder. It's like, yeah, I'm not having to endure enough, so I'm going to go and run a marathon going through mud and freezing cold temperatures, that, you know, on top of doing all these obstacle courses. Or people adopt a special needs kid. You know, it's like people look for things to endure if they don't have enough of them in their lives organically. And the reason why this is so gorgeous is because it gives us a chance to do things that we thought might be impossible. And it gives us a chance to see what we're capable of. And this includes fear, you know, like to go through something absolutely terrifying and then come through the other side. And, you know, you've not only endured it, but you've survived and you've actually learned from it. Like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I'm amazing. I'm the strongest person I know. And then there's the second kind of juicy thing that comes from this kind of somewhat depressing quote that actually is not depressing at all. But there's some freedom in that suffering, and that you have the freedom to react to the suffering in so many different ways. I just read something on the news right before I got on the call with you guys where some 21-year-old guy was slammed into the back of his wife's car, who was leaving him, they're getting a divorce, in order to get his wallet back, and total her car, put her in the hospital, hurt a bunch of people, and did $50,000 worth of damage to public property. It was public property. And it's like, okay, he's suffering. Yes, he's enduring something painful. He's probably going through a lot of fear. And he has the freedom to react that way, but I bet that's gonna be a major wake-up call for him, because there's so many different ways that you can react to your things that you're enduring. And so to look to yourself and see how you react to, there's a quote, it's credited with Nelson Mandela, the ultimate measure of a man, it's not by him, it's a woman, I forget her name. The ultimate measure of a man is not how you handle things in times of crisis, but how you handle things in times of conflict. And so when you're going through conflict, when you're enduring something, how you react to it is what really, really matters. And this is also captured in Man's Search for Meaning, which is a book about being in Auschwitz. You know, because what we're enduring shows ourselves what we're capable of. And either you find it in the Spartan races, or you find it in the cancer, or you find it in the, you know, working 70 hours a week until you're so burned out, you just want to die. Like I had no idea what I was capable of until this last year and a half. And I realize I am capable of getting so much more done than I used to get done. And I had no idea I had such a deep capacity for loving and caring. You know, like the amount of love and caring that I had for my marriage, which is now gone, that's actually really surprised me. And I had no idea I felt so strongly about my self-worth that I am absolutely unwilling to ever have that be compromised by another person's needs ever again, with integrity, of course. And so I think about Jeff, and it's like already the way that you're handling this is very positive. And like, that's a choice. Absolutely, that's a choice. And you want to make sure that you do the dance with fear too, rather than just look for the moments of joy within the fear. This is a chance for you to be your best self, absolutely. But sometimes your best self isn't staying positive. Sometimes your best self is just being in flow with the suck or whatever it is that you're enduring. And then the third thing that's kind of really juicy about this quote that kind of makes me want to weave it into what I teach about fear is that, taking the first part of the quote, you know, the art of life is to know how to enjoy a little. So much of life sucks, right? And when you go through really sucky experiences like cancer, or like Michael experienced with the death of his wife and having to take care of four little children when he was overwhelmed with work and all of that, it's like these sucky moments really make you appreciate the times when things don't suck. And I know you know what I'm talking about. Like fear everywhere. And then all of a sudden there's a moment, a brief moment where you're not afraid. Like I had last night in that pool. And then of course I had to drive home and it was over very quickly. But the juxtaposition of those moments of freedom, it's like we're so grateful when they come. And we even have moments where we can forge that freedom, like create the freedom, where we're like walking along and we're suffering. And we're like stopping and we're like, no, I'm going to back up. I'm going to smell this rose, which is like the quintessential moment of joy that we've been talking about for years in poetry. Can you create your own enjoyment? And not everyone on the planet has this luxury. You know, the luxury for the chance to find little things so enjoyable. So back to the quote, the art of life is to know how to enjoy a little and to endure much. And so maybe this quote in the end isn't so depressing after all. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one, or just sit as, even if you don't know what voice dialogue is, the one who knows how to enjoy a little and endure much. Just sit, have a moment of knowing how to enjoy just a little and endure so much. Look at all that you've endured. And I know you've had little moments of enjoyment. Is that it? Is this our life? It's a good life. This was written in the 1800s, early 1800s, but it still applies today. Enduring cancer, but having a moment of aha on a Saturday morning in the middle of that cancer. Just sit and feel this. It reminds me of the ultimate Zen story, which is this man was being chased by people that wanted to kill him. And he's running, and they're shooting arrows at him. And one of the arrows goes through his shoulder, and one goes through his calf, and he runs. He jumps off a cliff to get away from them. And he falls, trundles down the cliff, and he manages to capture, you know, his fall by grabbing onto a tree branch. And then down below there's alligators, and he didn't realize that he was jumping off a cliff into an alligator pit. And there's people still shooting arrows at him from above, and there's alligators that are trying to jump up and grab his pant leg and bring him down into their pit. And he's hanging by one arm, and he's losing his strength, and he has this arrow sticking out of his shoulder, an arrow sticking out of his calf. And then he sees, anybody know this story? What does he see? He sees a strawberry just coming out of the side of the cliff, just one perfectly ripe strawberry. And he reaches out and he takes it and he puts it in his mouth. And it's so delicious. So that's the ultimate Zen story. And really, I feel like the ultimate Zen journey with fear is both the dance with fear and then also finding and enjoying moments where you have freedom from it. Here's your homework. Your homework is to endure all the shit in your life in a way that makes you proud, and to enjoy the little moments between the endurance where you feel joy, and maybe even seek out that joy a bit from time to time. And that seems like a really good plan for life. So thank you.